Welcome to the Everyday Ultra Podcast, a show designed to help you level up your training, crush your races, and ultimately become a better endurance athlete every single day. Whether you're an endurance athlete as a hobby or someone who wants to be the best in the sport, this is the show for you. I'm your host, Joe Corcione, and thank you so much for listening. Now, let's get into it. What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Everyday Ultra Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Corcione. I'm super, super excited for today's episode. So recently we had on Aaron Clark, who came out from CCC and an epic seventh place finish, but we haven't had any guests on yet who completed the UTMB race. So also another legendary race coming out of Chamonix. And we have an awesome, awesome runner on today who absolutely crushed the race, placing in 15th, ranking pretty high for the US men out there, which, as you all know, the US men have always been a little bit difficult for us out there. But our guest today absolutely smashed the race, and I'm so excited to listen to his experience today. Not only did he smash UTMB, but he's also a very accomplished runner, notching in podium finishings at some legendary races down the road. Also broke the FKT for the Teton Crest Trail, which I actually found out pretty recently when I was doing the Teton Crest. So I was like, oh, like, look at that. Like, Jeff did this thing. And as I'm going on it, I'm like, oh my God, Jeff did this thing. This trail's nuts. So he's clearly a talented runner. He's also a runner for Hoka, as you all know, my favorite shoe brand. So he definitely gets a lot of love for that there, for being a Hoka athlete. And then also a coach for Alpine Running Guides, which is a coaching company out of Missoula, Montana. Also, if you guys remember Forrest, who was on the podcast before, he's also part of Alpine Running. And yes, as you say, we have another guest here from Missoula, one of the coolest running communities in the United States. So it's super cool to have our guest on today. But without further ado, I'd like to introduce the man, the myth, the legend onto the show here. Jeff, thanks so much for coming on the Everyday Ultra, man.
Thanks for having me on, Joe. Good to be here.
Yeah, man. Good to have you on. And congrats on the epic finish at UTMB, man. Like, I know you've been training so hard. I remember I was with Adam when I was meeting with him in Missoula, and he was telling me about your training. He was like, dude, you got to check out this guy, Strava. Like, he's just been like crushing it. And then when we were on a run together, me and Aaron, we saw you coming down with like the big pack and the poles, and you just look strong, ready. I was like, oh, this guy's locked in. So it's so cool to see that all the training went well, that you did well in the race, and that you smashed it, and so excited to hear all about it. But for those who maybe are just getting to know you, or, you know, aren't familiar with your background as much, how did you get into this crazy sport called ultra running that we are so accustomed to?
Yeah. It's a good question. I ran cross country in high school, like a lot of people, and then did one season in college at a D3 school in New York, and then stopped doing that and ended up on the trails. I had done I did a 42 mile backpacking loop that I accidentally ran with a friend. And that was I kind of knew what ultra running was. I didn't know really anything about it. I was like, oh, people walk in the mountains, big deal. And a friend and I had gone to do a quick backpacking loop, and just kind of through a bet type thing, ended up running the whole thing in like 15 hours.
Whoa.
And it was cool because no one told me you could do that. I just had no idea. I didn't know it was an option. And then I stumbled into it, and I was kind of this thought of, oh, I could do this for the rest of my life. This is the coolest thing in the world. And yeah, after a season of cross country, I decided I'd rather play in the mountains and cut my teeth doing long things in the Adirondacks in New York, which are brutal mountains to run in. They're really fun and super gnarly trails. And yeah, all my summers in college were out west, and so started racing out here, and then graduated from school and spent for 3.5 years living in my dad's old construction van before vans were cool. It was just, it's a windowless white van that at one point I like punched out the back window with a tree branch, and I just had duct tape on it. It looked horrifying, but I lived in that for 3.5 years and worked seasonal fisheries biology jobs and ran, and then moved to Missoula 3.5 years ago, kind of to focus on running. And I was tired of moving around, and accidentally stumbled into the greatest running community ever. and it's been a blast.
That's so cool, man. First of all, love the story of you just kind of just being on this backpacking loop and just sending it and not even knowing like ultra running is a thing. Like that is like the coolest thing ever. Like, and you just kind of did it without anyone telling you it was a thing. And I feel like that's such like a natural transition into the sport, which is so cool.
Yeah, it was fun. It definitely was this marrying of two interests. Like I loved running, but I also loved backpacking and being out. And in reality, it's hard to get 20 days off of work or school to go backpack for 1,000 miles. Mm-hmm. And so running 50 in a weekend is a great alternative.
I love it. You get to cover more mileage much quicker. You get to see more things in a shorter amount of time. Like that is freaking awesome.
I love both. They're different things. You know, my after I usually do a summer race, and then afterwards my girlfriend and I will go into the Bob Marshall Wilderness here in Montana and do a backpacking trip. So this is our third year, and it was after Broken Arrow in Western States, got back and then did a, I think it was an 80-ish mile loop over 4 days, which was, it was a blast. And you just see so few people out there. And we saw a wolf chasing an elk. It's really cool. Whoa. This is awesome stuff. So I love backpacking, but
that's so cool. Yeah. And you have so many good backpacking trails out there in Montana. Like, it's just like, I mean, one of the meccas, I think, in the US for it. It's just super, super cool to see that. Also, didn't know you had your teeth sharpened by the Adirondack Mountains. Those are insane. Me and my buddy, we tried to do all 46 high peaks and in 1 week and had to tap out because I just did not respect the gnarliness of that trail. So, man, that gives you some pretty hardened experience.
That's cool. I had no idea. Yeah. So I, in my sophomore year of school, I remember doing a couple peaks with a friend, and I don't know, I just was curious and said, how many can you do in a day?
Right.
And they were like, oh, well, you can do the Great Range, which is like eight mountains. Like that's what you can do in a day. Like it's Backpacker Magazine's hardest day hike in America. And I was like, no, I mean like in a day. Like I'm talking a day, like 24 hours. Like, I don't know, like a real day. And the best I could find was like anecdotally someone had done 16. And I kind of became obsessed with this idea of how many could you do in 24 hours. And over the next year, just started plotting different routes. I basically made a never ending route because I had no clue. I was like, is it 16 or is it 40?
Right.
And knew a little bit about the FKT, but I know there's some that well, there are some that are just so far from like the central bit of the mountains that you can't do them. It would take a day to walk to the next.
Right.
And so I made this route through the mountains that like connected them in the most logical and tight manner and just figured I'd give it a whirl. And I had no clue what I was doing. At this point, it was my junior year of college. I'd run one 21 mile trail race in Idaho, the Scout Mountain Ultra Trail. And I bought a running pack before showing up at school. I was like, sick, I got my pack. And then I had to teach my friend to drive stick shift so that she could drive my car back from the trailhead. And like did that in the morning and also got up early to finish schoolwork and then went to class. And then at like noon started driving. But I didn't start till like 3 p.m. I'd been awake for 9 hours and started this 24 hour thing. And I got my ass kicked, but it was so fun. And it was, I ended up getting 21 peaks.
21 in like, peaks in an hour in or 24 day, hours, yeah. 24 hours. And oh my God.
I'd run 20. I think the longest I'd ever run was like 25 miles. I run a marathon. So that was long to run. I didn't really know what I was doing. I was like, this sounds like really fun. And I remember standing, like weather came in. It was bad. It was cold and wet and windy. I was up on Mount Marcy and it was the highest point in New York and it was just blowing wind. My jacket soaked through. So I had a trash bag that I just like poked my head through and jabbed my arms out of. And that was my raincoat. And I think it was like 8 miles on like pretty rough trail down to the Adirondack, the Adirondack Lodge trailhead. And I was wasted. And I was out of water, but didn't stop for water. Cause I was like, if I stop moving, I'm going to I'm going to die. And so I just kept going and couldn't eat anything because I had no water and just felt miserable. And I started hallucinating and saw a man playing chess. I patted him on the shoulder and it's the Rock. And then I was so haggard looking when I got to the trailhead that my friends thought I was just a homeless person and they didn't come to me. They were just like, oh, there's a guy. And it was 5 minutes later that I was like, is that you guys? So that was my first, I was awake for 36 hours. But that went, that was hard. And then the next year I trained some more. I had a couple longer races under my belt and it was my senior year of school. And I successfully did what I wanted to do was 24 peaks in 24 hours. Because it sounded really nice.
Yeah.
Nice and I did it. So I was super excited.
24. Damn. That's crazy, dude. And for those who aren't familiar with the Adirondack Mountains, that's incredible accomplishment. I mean, we did 8 or 9 in one day or something like that. And I was wrecked.
They're
and
hard.
Gnarly and so wet and muddy and slick and technical. And it's dude, it's and logistically getting to some of these peaks are just a nightmare on its own. I mean,
if you look on a map and you see a flat trail, that just means it's a mud pit.
Yes.
Or large wet boulders with leaves on them.
Right.
With mud pits in between.
Oh my gosh. So I feel like that, 24 peaks in 24 hours in the Adirondack Range is impressive, for real. And it's I think it's a mountain range that doesn't get too much. I mean, people know of it, but I don't think people know of it. And it's so anytime I hear someone's has that background in the Adirondacks, it's oh, okay. I can see how they're a strong runner, coming from that kind of background.
Yeah. And it was, it was a tough day out there, but one of my favorite days. It was so hard. And it was cool. I've done 400 milers, including UTMB, but didn't do one. I mean, I did 2 24 hour things before attempting a 100 miler. And then I ended up doing another FKT thing that took 32 hours. It did not get the FKT, but I'd done all of those before 100 milers. So I'm I've done some long things that aren't necessarily hundreds, but I've suffered. I've given my blood to the mountains.
What made you want to do that pivot into these kind of longer, I don't want to say hiking-esque challenges, but it's kind of more like that, FKTs and doing those 24 peaks challenges. Those are kind of a different ball game than the 100 milers. So what kind of made you want to pivot to that? And then, cause it seems you kind of got into that a little bit more, cutting your teeth into some of those more organized ultra races, obviously leading to UTMB. So what caused that shift in kind of races that you were dabbling into?
I love playing in the mountains, and in college I didn't really know what I was doing, and it just seemed a big scary thing that I didn't know if I could do. And so I went for it. And I remember the first year I tried that 24-hour thing, I mean, I was picking up a bladder from someone's dorm the night before starting. I just had a jar of peanut butter and a bag of tortillas. I was stopping mid-trail to make peanut butter tortillas.
And you had that the entire time?
I had 2 frozen burritos that just my back warmed. It's evening came and I was oh, perfect. They're heated up. I just munched them and moved along.
So good.
But I remember I was grabbing that bladder and there's some guy who I looked up to him. He was some junior or senior. I think he was a senior that he was a 46er. He'd done all the 46 high peaks and knew what he was doing out there. And I told him what I was doing. And he was just oh, you can't do that. And I was what? He's no, that's not possible. You're not going to do it. And he was hi. And just you're not going to do it. And I was well, you know what? Screw you. I'm gonna do it. And then I didn't do it. And I had to come back the next year, but then I did it. And I don't know. I always get stuck by those questions of well, could I do that? And I feel like that's kind of how I stumbled into the sport in some ways, is just could I run that backpacking loop? I like the questions that we don't know the answers to. And I also love racing. And so it's really fun to go race and push myself and just see what is possible.
That's
so whether so just like on an unstructured thing in the mountains or in a race, it's still like doing things that scare myself and figuring out what I can do.
That's so awesome, dude. I love that, man. Like just like having that question of like, can I do this? Or like people would be like, oh, you can't do that. And just being like, oh, well, maybe we're going to show up and try. Like, I absolutely love that. Like, that is just such a cool feeling, like to, you know, whether like someone is not sure about something or maybe like you're not even sure. And then you kind of show yourself like crossing that finish line, and be like, whoa, like I did that. Like, that is a freaking awesome.
Yeah. And it's, I think we live in a world where we have all the answers right at our fingertips, and it's cool to do something that's never been done before. Sometimes it feels like there is nothing that's never been done before, especially in the outdoors. Like, oh, every mountain's been climbed, you know, and now it's, well, how fast? And I think it just, it's really exciting. Like for me in college, it was like, whoa, here are these mountains that people have been in for hundreds of years and thousands of years prior to that. And as far as I know, no one's seen how many they could do in one day. And it was cool that someone's like, you can't do that. And I probably should have believed them, but it's more exciting trying to do a thing that you think is impossible and then creating a whole new, I don't know, scale to judge things off of because it is possible. You did the thing.
So good. So good. I love that. Like, and it's like this like boost of like elation or like confidence or just like this like fulfilling feeling to like find out that answer yourself. Like, and I love that you made that connection of like, everybody's got the answers, like, you know, in their fingertips, literally nowadays. Like you can just say like, oh, like I wonder, you know, what the answer is to this question, boom, it's on there. But like in an ultra and like what you are capable of or what someone else, like you have to put yourself in the fire. It's not like a, you know, something that's as easy as just a click of a button. Like you sometimes got to run 100 miles to find that. And it makes like that grit almost makes that answer just so much more rewarding. Don't you agree?
Oh yeah. I mean, things you have to sacrifice everything for much sooner.
Exactly. 100%. Like, do you think like having this background in like this, these rugged, like, and it doesn't just specifically have to be the Adirondacks, but like going for FKTs and like more of just kind of this, like, you know, in the mountains wilderness, do you think that prepared you well for like the 100-mile format? Or I guess like what has been kind of like the biggest keys to success on top of that, if that was a factor?
Yeah, I think, it's definitely informed the way I do these races. Like if I start a race, I'm going to finish it. So help me God. Like it's unless I'm medically not allowed to continue. Mm. Like I would never sign up for a race unless I'm going to finish it.
Medically not allowed. I love that too. That's like,
yeah, like if someone's like, hey, yeah, like you have rhabdo and you're going to die. I'm like, okay, I won't keep going. But I don't know, like Camille Heron at States the other year, I think she slept for like 8 hours and finished. And I think everyone should, that should be like required. Like you can't leave until you take a nap. You can't DNF until you've slept and then keep trying and get caught by cutoffs, whether you're chasing cutoffs from the get-go or you're trying to set a course record. And that's not necessarily a popular opinion, but I think that's what happens to so many people at UTMB is they don't have the race they want. And that race hurts no matter what. Mm-hmm. And people, I mean, the only reason in my head, at least the only reason you should drop out is you are medically unable to continue. Mm-hmm. Like Tim Tolleson had COVID, good mm-hmm. reason to drop out.
Yeah.
Like a respiratory disease that is sweeping the world. I know it's a personal choice. I always say this. I'm like, oh, I'll probably drop out of my next race for some reason. But I don't know. I think it helps. I felt horrible the second half of UTMB.
Yeah.
And people have said to me like, oh, you kept moving up. I'm like, I don't know how I did. I felt like garbage. And it would have been less painful if I dropped out. But I think you should just keep going. And I think it's good for the sport too. Like there are people that all they want to do is finish, like as elite runners. I think we owe it to them out of respect we owe it to everyone and ourselves to get to the finish line. And I think that comes from doing unsupported mountain things where no one's coming to get me. Mm. Like that 24-hour thing in the Adirondacks, I thought I was toast a couple times. And like, I had a spot. I could have called for help, but I knew I was calling in the cavalry, and I really needed to be needing it if I was going to click that button. So I think I carry that with me in 100 milers too, and all races.
I love that, man. I absolutely love the thing too. When you said, like, as pro runners, like it almost is like a tribute to like, you know, the runners who are just doing it as like to finish. Cause I think so many times, like it's easy to see, you see some professional runners in there, they'll, you know, maybe not have the day that they want, or like they know that like top three is out of range or something, and they're big, all right, well, they feel good, right? Like they're just maybe just not placing. They're just like, all right, I'm just gonna, you know, chalk this one up on and 60 miles DNF. And like, I get how like some people like vibe that way, but I've never thought of it in the way that you mentioned, of just like, hey, like, you know, you owe it to, you know, yourself and other runners to like finish. And I think that's such like a good way to think about it. Like, especially for like, you're right, like as someone who wants to just finish a race, I feel like they see that and it's like, oh, that's freaking awesome. Like they gritted it out to the end. It's much more like inspiring to them and good for the sport, like you mentioned.
Yeah. And it, you know, if you're towing the line, you're towing the line to finish the race, mm-hmm. not to, that should always be the end goal, is like finish.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it, another Missoula runner, Chris Brown, did, who also runs for Hoka, ran 100K Worlds the same day as UTMB. And he had a really tough race. It did not go how he wanted. He was like, had rhabdo like a marathon in, which was remarkable, but really impressive.
Whoa.
And he like talked to the medic, and the guy was like, you're good, like you're okay right now, but if you start feeling like X, Y, and Z symptoms, you like stop. Because Chris went to him and was like, I'm finishing this race no matter what. What has to happen where I need to pull the plug? Like I'm endangering myself. And the medic was like, okay, like just drink a ton of water, and if you know, your lower back hurts, like your back, or like you're disoriented, you need to stop immediately. But Chris like saw his goals go out the window, was like peeing dark, dark brown. And he was like, I'm finishing this race. And that's a road 100K. What a miserable race to finish. Like he still had half the race left and he knew his goals were out the window. And you can't like come back from a couple of slow miles. Like you're running so fast. There's not much room for error. And he just told me that two nights ago. And I think that's so true. And I think the sport would be really cool if everyone stuck to that. Because in all those DNFs you see, it's like, well, maybe they could have gotten 10th, or maybe they would have gotten last, in which case every person in the field beat them fair and square. And I think that matters.
100%. And I don't know if you agree with this, but I think so too. I feel like someone who like persist through like so much adversity and pain and finishes, you know, maybe at like, you know, 20th or whatever, like is to me is like a lot more inspiring than maybe someone who finishes like 10th, like super fresh, you know, like, I don't know what it is. It's something about just seeing someone go through like so much adversity and so much pain and struggle, and maybe it wasn't their day, and like still continuing to push forward like that. I mean, on the paper and the results, it's obvious, it's, you know, it looks like it's less, but to me, I feel like it's just like, I always like, that's why golden hour is so beautiful at races, right? That's why people love that, to see like that last hour of people who have just been out there grinding all day and just suffering, and seeing them cross the finish line is like one of the most incredible things ever. So I think
what would be cooler than seeing your favorite pro runner crawling around the track at Western States in the golden hour? Like they blew up and like had to take a nap and like eat multiple meals, and they just crawled it in. Like, I think that'd be wild, you know? And it's
so wild.
I don't know. Yeah. And I kind of wonder if at UTMB, so many people, there's so many pro runners and elite runners that are used to winning races or having a bad day and getting 10th. Mm-hmm. But there they have a bad day and they're in 50th or 80th. And or 20th, and they're like not used to that. I wonder if that contributes to dropping, because they think they're having a much worse day than they are. There's like kind of a theory I have that isn't really founded. I don't know how you could validate that, but I just wonder mentally, it's a total, everyone's in a different mental position than they've ever been in their careers if they haven't done that race.
Yeah.
And it only happens once a year where you're in a race like that.
So interesting. So
it's such an unusual place to find yourself.
Yeah, 100%. And I feel like it's like, you know, why you've seen males not struggle for the US males, not like really just try, it's so hard to find their footing. And like, you know, I mean, obviously Jim is incredible and, you know, we all know how talented he is, but I mean, like even after living there for a while, like, you know, still like he comes in at fourth and even him, he like knows that it's going to be a long-term process. And I feel like it's a whole lifestyle that like is that mental shift needed. It's interesting to see though, how like the women have figured it out. And it's, I think, something that we're always trying to think about and everything. But I'm curious, like, you know, in your specific experience to UTMB, right? Like, this was your first time out there at the race. Mm-hmm. What was your mindset kind of going into UTMB? Like, kind of given everything we said, right? Whole different kind of environment. Like, for you, it's like your first time running in Europe. Obviously, a legendary race. Like, for you, what was kind of like your intention and mindset going into UTMB?
Yeah, I looked at... I'm not one to like be like, I must follow splits, but I looked at splits. I looked at a lot of splits to see how different people run this race. And I remember looking at, was it last year that Ludovic got fourth?
I think so.
Yeah. It was an awesome race. And I looked at the iRunPar coverage and they were like, oh, he like went out slow and stayed back, but like in touch with the top 10, then moved up. And then I looked at his splits and I was like, that is not what happened. Like, I'm sorry, he did 20 miles at like 6:30 grade adjusted pace. Like, he did not go out slow. Going out slow would be 8 minutes, which right. is what the, like, Killian won in an average of 8:15 gap. And so everyone goes out so freaking fast. So I looked at Courtney DeWalter's splits. I was like, what did Courtney do? Like, Courtney knows what's up. Because she finished top 7 last year and like overall. And she went out much slower. Way slower and just moved her way up through the field. And she still went out too fast. Like, I don't think it's possible to run that first 20 and not go out too fast. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why it makes for such an exciting end of the race, because everyone's just done this thing that's unsustainable for 20 miles. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, you're just setting yourself up for an explosion 20 to 50 miles later. I mean, it's just like a ticking time bomb. Like, it's just waiting for something to happen.
Right.
And that's what makes this race so cool, is you have like Killian survived it, right? And Jim didn't. You would have liked to have been with Killian. And I mean, he survived it better than most people, but it's so hard to stay out front when you go out so fast. And my plan was to follow Courtney's splits roughly. Like, I wanted to start around there and then finish faster. And I started a little faster than her, but I felt good with it. I was like, I feel in a good spot. And my plan was to, the race starts at Courmayeur, essentially. Mm-hmm. And there's a climb out of Courmayeur that's all road for a while, like 2 miles or so. And it is just the worst grade. It sucks. And if you're tired, you want to walk it.
Yeah.
And I told myself, like, if I'm running up this and feel good, I'm in a really good spot. Mm-hmm. And so my plan was to feel good for that. And that was kind of my mindset going in, and then just hang on for dear life. But I tend to be a pretty strong downhill runner, especially in the back half of races. So I was kind of banking on that a bit and knew I'd go really conservative on all the downhills in the first half. And I think people passed me on every downhill in the first half, which is what I wanted. And just trusting my training. It was so hard being over there and putting in for me like really big weeks. And then seeing people doing bigger weeks or faster. And it's just, the comparison game is so hard and so real. We all do it. And my Madison, my girlfriend, was so sweet. She's like, you know what? Like, that doesn't matter. Like, all that matters is the race. I'm like, I know that, but thank you for telling me, because I needed to hear it. Like, I know these things and I'm a coach and tell people these things, but when it's you and you're sitting there in a hotel room alone for 12 hours, you start freaking out.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew the hype at the race would be bonkers, so I'm definitely mentally prepared to like shut everything out at the start and just be. I debated wearing earplugs so I couldn't, because it's so loud. Just to, like, not have my, like, cortisol levels spike.
Right.
I was talking to my coach, Ryan Gelfi from Trails and Tarmac, and he was saying, like, when he's done it, it's just you walk up to the start and, like, your heart rate goes to the roof. Like, it's just so hyped. And so I was definitely aware of that and, like, wanted to not be so hyped. You still get pretty hyped, but
Right. It seems like it's like no one's immune to, like, number one, the comparison thing, like you mentioned before, right? I feel like it's something that everyone, like, knows intellectually. They're like, comparison's like the thief of joy, like, never compare. But I feel like it's almost, I haven't met anyone who doesn't, you know, see someone else's Strava or, like, you know, see what, even if they're not a runner, like, on social media, and, like, you start, like, subconsciously, like, comparing yourself in some way. I think that's just, like, how we are as humans. And it's like, I think it's one of the toughest things, especially when you're going into, like, a race, like, where you, like, you know, you're going up against, like, other people who are, like, putting in training. And, like you mentioned, even sometimes putting in higher mileage, right? Like, I mean, I'm prepping for a race now and I'm going through the same exact thing. And it's just so hard to, like, to turn that off sometimes. Like, but I mean, it seems like, you know, you were able to ground yourself, like, enough, like, to, you know, really, you know, keep it together, so to say. Right.
Yeah. And I think it's, you know, for a race like this going into it, I'm kind of like, who am I to think I can win?
Oh, but, so you didn't go into it, like, being like, oh, like, I want to win. Like, it was just kind of like,
going into it, I think it's hard to tell myself I can do that, you know? And it, like, I've never won 100 mile. Who am I to think I can win UTMB? But you kind of have to make a jump and believe that you can do it. And to be honest, I think I believed I'd get top five. I don't think I believed I could win, and I need to believe I can win. Even if it seems, there's still the chance. Like, in 2016, Ludovic Pommeret won out of nowhere. And, like, he wouldn't have done that if some part of him didn't believe he could win. And I think a little part of me did, but I need all of me to believe. And we should all go into races like that. And yeah, because otherwise you're limiting your potential. And I went into it ready to compete with everyone. And yeah, I wanted to be top five for sure. And I think that was one thing, like, my first UTMB, I'm like, I don't think I'm allowed to set the goal to win. Like, I think I kind of felt like I wasn't supposed to do that. I'm like, I think top five is probably pretty good. Like, I don't know. I shouldn't ask for too much here. But which is, it's kind of funny. Mentally, it's a funny thing to go into. Like, and I have no clue. I'm like, how can I want to win? I don't know what the hell I'm walking into. And I think I wish I believed in myself a little bit more there. But I also knew my game plan. I knew I wouldn't be, like, tussling with one and two in the big, like, in the lead pack. And I didn't want to be, because that's not how I've done well at 100 milers in the past. I've done well closing hard. And I think passing people in the back half feels a lot better than being passed. And that was my plan, was to work my way up through the field. And that plan went really well until it stopped working. But
I definitely want to dive into that too. And I have a question that I was going to ask as a follow-up, but I kind of want to go into that part too. Like, first of all, absolutely. Like, dude, you got goosebumps coming down. Like, when you said, like, the whole, like, everything has to believe, right? Like, you can, like, believe a little bit and that can get you so far, but, like, I feel like it's like that conviction that, like, just really sets some people apart. And it's such a tricky game, like, and kind of going back into our original part of the conversation where we were talking about, like, the question, right? Like, sometimes it's always, like, hard to maybe, like, fully dive in when, like, you've never been in a kind of race like that before. Like, you're going against, like, a really field, like, competitive field that's, like, so newer, like, to you and everything. But I 100% agree with you. I think it's, like, when you believe, like, full heartedly, like, that's, like, the power right there. Now tell us a little bit about the race. You said it was going well and the strategy was serving you, and then it didn't. And you mentioned, like, earlier in the show, you said, like, those last few miles you were climbing, but, like, it was a struggle. So tell us a little bit about like what went wrong and how the heck did you still able to like still climb it out despite facing so much adversity in those final, like, you know, section of the race, so to say.
Yeah. So I felt really good to core my air mile 50. And I made a point. I'd seen somewhere someone was like, smile and give high fives. And it wasn't directed at me. I just don't remember where I saw that advice of how to enjoy UTMB. And I really leaned into that. I was like, this is so cool. So I made a point to high five every kid that I saw. Adults, I was like, yeah, okay. If they were near kids. But I was like, I want to like, when I was a kid, I'd want to high five. Like that would make a difference in my life. Like I think I'd start running because of that.
Yeah.
So I high fived all the kids I could and like smiled and I don't know. There'd be people, you know, like with their like hands down on the trail, like doing the finger thing. They'd like do the tunnel, like a woo when I run by. So like, I would do it with them and people really liked it. I was just having fun. And it also made me keep the effort easy because if I was working too hard, I wouldn't be so lighthearted.
So good.
And kind of kept that rolling to Courmayeur. Like I remember getting to Le Chapeau, which is 50K in, and that's where people start dropping. And I just remember like they had some great music and I was just like dancing in the aid station, like trying to figure out what I wanted, like dancing, drinking some Coke. And it was really fun. And I was having a blast and got into Courmayeur and saw Madison was crewing me and felt great. I was like, sweet. Like let's rock. And left Courmayeur and just started hammering up that hill. Which so that was my plan, was if I felt good there, like we were all systems were go. And I felt like I was flying up the thing and I passed these two guys immediately. And I didn't really know what place I was in. I thought I was around 20th, but like you go into the aid station and it's so big. I didn't know if I passed anyone or I got passed by people. And I started cranking up the hill, get to the trail, start going up and tried to have a sip of like I had liquid calories. It worked great for me all training. And I couldn't even, I like touched my lips and I was like, And then all of a sudden I just got super nauseous.
Whoa.
And got like woozy nauseous and just like felt like I had to throw up. But I was like, it's like when you have a fever and you're sick and you have to throw up, but you know you're not going to throw up for a while, but you feel whole. And it felt like that. I was like, oh no. So I kind of like started like trying to like heave. I was like, ugh. And I was like, I think if I throw up, I'm going to feel better. Like, I don't know what's going on, but something went down that needs to come out. And I couldn't throw up and just felt sick the whole climb up to Bertone. And these two guys that I had passed, who I think it was a French guy and an English guy who run for Scott. And they were awesome. I ended up going back and forth with them the whole rest of the race. And the French guy didn't speak English, but the English guy did. And we were chatting and he was kind of like, oh, just hang with us. Like, we're just going to sweep through people. And I think they ran like 70 miles of the race stride, like matching strides.
Wow. But
I got to Bertone, felt terrible and dumped out my water bottle and then started making what would be the biggest error of my race, which was I had some Coke, which is the best thing I did, but I left the aid station with water and I didn't fill my water bottle with Coke. And I should have dumped out both and filled one with Coke, one with water, or both with Coke. Coke was the only thing I could stomach. And I don't know why I did not fill my bottles with Coke.
Oh God.
I think just like the whole aid station experience was so different. And it this might seem silly, but I left my little cup, because you have to have a reusable cup, at Courmayeur. And not having the cup, all of a sudden, in order to have Coke, I had to like dump out a water bottle, fill it with Coke, drink it. If I have too much, like dump it out, have them fill with water. And it was like all these back and forths. And I didn't speak the language and like couldn't be like, I forgot my cup. Like, here, you're good. And I think that just like created this block where I didn't think about like, I can just fill my bottle with Coke, which I've done before. Like, I don't know why I didn't do it. And then the other foods that I normally go to aren't there because it's a French race and there's just cheese and prosciutto, which does not sound good. And like these dry crackers that were like not quite as dry as saltines, but were pretty dry. I could kind of stomach those and like a little bit of banana, but, and then there's chocolate. I was like, oh, I love chocolate.
Right.
It's not Snickers. It's like 90% cacao dark chocolate.
Oh, God. And you're like,
oh, chocolate. So that was the beginning of when it got hard. And I kind of basically rode like sugar highs for 30 minutes and then just crashed super freaking hard. And then we get to an aid station, like the same, and just repeat it. But I was just having, you know, a couple, like a cup of Coke. I wasn't having a full bottle. I wasn't having like a bottle of Coke. I was just having like a little bit. And I passed some more people in that section. There's a couple, I think Thai runners that blew up, or someone said they were Thai runners, but like there's like three in a row. And then I think I was in like 14th at the top of Grand Col Ferret, which I didn't know. I thought I was in like 18th or 20th. And my plan was like, here we go. I've been running downhill so like lightly. I was ready to like crank.
Yeah.
And the tops of my feet hurt. My hips were sore. My quads ached. I felt like someone was tearing my quads apart.
Whoa.
I just felt terrible. Like I was like, this is horrible. I don't want to go downhill. And I looked at my watch. I was like, oh, fuck, this thing's 107 miles, isn't it? Like, I have 40 miles to go. Like, damn it. But it was really pretty. It was gorgeous sunrise. So I timed it perfectly.
Right.
And it was just like suffering from there. Like, just, it was a long way down to La Folie. And I got passed by those two Scott guys again. I think we went into La Folie together. And yeah, I like went to the bathroom there. They passed me. And then I looked behind me and saw three people come around this corner. I was like, oh, crap. Like, I'm about to get passed by three people.
Mm.
And so I like put it, I'm like, God, go, like, come on, you got to run. And it's just all running at this point. And it hurt so much. It was kind of like if I kept running, it was like I could get my legs going. Like, they kept like a momentum. But it felt like my legs were shutting down because I didn't have enough food.
Mm.
Like, there was just no fuel for them. And this dude comes charging up to me. I mean, he was going so fast. And we, like, chat briefly. I, like, match his pace. And for some reason, it was like the caffeine and food hit me from the aid station. I was like, I can do this. And I just roll with this guy.
Nice.
And I mean, we are flying. I'm like, this is way too fast. But I'm just going to do it. I pass those two Scott runners again. And they're like, I was like, I'm just going to run with Marcus. And they're like, okay. Just go. And then that guy drops me. And then eventually at the climb from Orsier up to Champagne-Lac, it's up to like mile 70 or so, the Scott guys catch me again. And I was like, oh, guys, I was just going with that guy because I felt good. And I just got to ride these highs. And the one dude's like, just stick with us, man. You'll get there. And he was right, if only. But they ran so evenly, and I was so just like riding highs while I could and then just surviving the lows.
Mm.
And I walked so slowly into Champagne-Lac. I mean, I thought my race was done. I felt horrible.
Mm.
And I saw Adam Peterman heading into it. I was like, Adam, I feel horrible. And he's just like, go away, like Madison's in there. And I don't know. I just wanted to like bitch and moan about it. I saw Megan Hicks from my run far. She's like, how are you feeling? And I was like, I forget what I said. I was like, I'm tired. She's like, we all are. I was like, fair. And then she's like, oh, you look good. Keep it up. I'm like, oh, that's nice. Like, I look horrible. I walk into Champagne-Lac and Madison sits me down and she's like, how's it going? I tell her I haven't been eating. I think she thought I said I hadn't eaten at all, which like I had eaten food, just like instead of 300 plus calories an hour, I was getting 50 to 100.
Right.
And that's not enough. And she sits me down, has me try to eat things. I ate a chocolate croissant to my favorite bakery, which is phenomenal.
Nice.
I actually left the aid station eating it. And I looked around and there's like four people in the aid station. Which means if I leave right then, all of a sudden I'm four places higher.
Oh,
and they all looked horrible. And I was like, well, I can't possibly look as bad as these people. I have since learned I did look as bad as them. Madison was like, you looked terrible. And I just like had Orangina, which is this orange juice, orange soda yeah. thing I have out there that I got hooked on. And I was just like double fisting Orangina and Red Bull and just getting in as many calories as I could and eating some snacks and went back to eating all gels or pretending to. And I left. Madison was like, you have to finish that croissant before you can leave. And I like wanted to leave at this point. And I was like, can I take it with me? And I promise I'll eat it before I leave town. She was like, fine, but you have to promise me. I was like, okay, I will finish the croissant before I leave town. And I made a point to choke it. It was really hard to eat while running, but I choked it down before leaving Champagne Lock.
Nice.
And yeah, I mean, just the burst of calories I could run through town, which was great. And then they wore off. And it was just like, I was back to feeling horrid. And climbing was brutal. Climbing was slow, but I could climb decently. Descending was truly bad. And it was getting hot too. And I've struggled in the heat in the past, but after being at Western States, I'm like, oh, you just have to stay soaking wet.
Yeah.
So at one point I passed these hikers and then just laid in this tiny little creek and like got soaking wet. They come around a corner and look at me and are just like, what is wrong? Oh my God. And then same thing, I got up to this, the bovine, like there's a refugio up there. There's no aid station, but I knew there was a water faucet. And everyone at the refugio, there's like 30, 40 people there. They're like clapping for you and like cheering. And I like pull over and there's a fence. I go by the fence and they're all kind of like, what? I turn the spigot on and just like sit under it, which they all loved, which I thought was really funny. And it saved me. I felt so much better. But yeah, I kind of just like peg leg down the steep descents, which they're all steep and tough. And it hurt so bad. And it was so frustrating. It's like, this is what I love. Like, this is what I feel like I'm good at. I finished other 100 milers hammering downhill. And I'm just like, I have nothing. It felt like that for 40 miles. And I got to the last climb from do a road crossing and it's like 3,000 feet up. Felt good for a switchback. And then I've never moved slower in my entire life. It was like a 2.5 or 3 hour section. And I had to sit down to eat a gel. Like I just sat on a rock and stopped moving. And I think I just like put my head in my hands. I was like, oh my God, like, I hope I live. Like, I'm just going to die out here. I'd like pass hikers and they just like look at me and cheer. And then they keep looking at me and like continue cheering. And I'm like, okay, I look bad. And I saw this guy, Mike McGonigal up there. And well, actually I didn't see him. He had a photo of me afterwards, like a really cool photo. And I was like, wait, was this the last climb? Like, I have no recollection of seeing you. And I was woozy. Like I was like tippy turny stumbling up this thing and just, I had tried that one gel was all I had in like 2.5 hours or so.
Oh,
I guess I had a little bit of scratch too, but I mean, I needed to be having 600 calories, not 150.
Right.
And at that point it was just like that little hole of having like 100, not enough. 10 hours later catches up to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I got past going to that like La Flégère aid station, and I was nothing I could do. I was like, I just hope there's not more people behind this person because I'm gonna get past. Like I can't move faster. And it was just I'd run that descent like 3 or 4 times and knew what it felt like to move well and knew what it felt like to move slowly but in control. And I was walking. And it was terrible, and hit the last aid station and I joked with the aid station people. I must have had like a can and a half of Coke there, just like chugging. And then I was like, what's that? And there's some little bread thing. And they're like, oh, it's like a Christmas bread. I was like, perfect. I love Christmas. And like had this random bread and then just ate 3 cookies and just started feeling better because I was eating.
Yeah.
And left there and it's really steep and just kind of peg legged my way out. And then could like ease my legs into running. And I knew people were coming up behind me. I was like, there's Like, I like to think I'm going to catch someone. I don't think that's going to happen. I'm going to keep that possibility alive. Like, I think I'm surviving this thing. And I did. And it was really fun, really hard. And finishing through the crowds is just so cool. And high-fiving folks and seeing Madison and Adam and Aaron at the finish was awesome. And the second I finished, like it, I think they like interviewed me, which I vaguely remember, but people said I looked with it, which like, I guess I probably was kind of, but I think they asked me if I would come back next year. And I think I said, that'd be fun. But within an hour after finishing, I was like, I will be here next year.
Wow. Within an
and
hour.
I'm going to run a hell of a lot faster.
Wow. And
I feel like if I'd eaten, I could have run an hour faster. Like, I really feel like I could have run a lot faster. I feel like I've never felt that horrible in a race, and it didn't go that bad. Like I wish I had been faster, but it was cool to run a time that any other year would have been like fifth through seventh place or something. It's cool to see the sport get so fast. It's like awesome. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I want to race again. So I finished the race and I was like, that's not how I wanted to race. I need to race again soon. It's like, that wasn't good enough.
And first of all, it's so epic to see like how between the lack of calories, the leg pain, between like the just all like the feeling like just crap out there, to see you just continue to push and continue to go forward. And like, never once, like, you know, like I love it. One part you're like, I might die here, but it was never, I might quit. Like, I love it. Like there was never, it seemed like from like what you were describing, never that inkling of like wanting to like drop out. Like you were always just focused on just getting forward and everything. And I think it's so cool. It's funny because like, I heard Killian on an interview, someone like asked if like he was going to do like Western states in the future, whatever. And he goes, never like ask someone if they're going to do like another ultra, like 2 hours after they've just ran one. And I think the feeling's mutual. So to see you like an hour after one of like the toughest races of your life, say you're going to come back, I think that says something. And to bring it back to your original point, like now knowing how like this race went, like, and going back next year, do you believe that like you could totally finish top five next year UTMB?
Yes.
Nice. I love it.
I'll see you next year.
Yes. I love how that was like such a direct yes. Yes. I love it.
And it'll be the hardest day of my life, but it'll be fun.
How has this like affected your belief? Like, I mean, and the reason why I ask is because like, I think like, I just love the point that you mentioned before, is like you showed yourself like what you were capable of. And like on that day, like despite like maybe things not going the way that was, like you said before, you're like, oh man, if I like ran good, like if my nutrition was good, like if all this stuff, like what could have been. What is like going through that experience at UTMB kind of done with like the way that you, I guess, see yourself as a runner and like how you can compete out there at UTMB?
I mean, I guess I go into, I feel like 100 milers especially, but any ultra, it is never over until it's over. Like until you cross the line, anything can happen. You can break your leg at mile 99, or you can pass 10 people at mile 99. Like I'm sure, I mean, you and Aaron talked about, like she finished in a 530 mile, 520, like out sprinted someone that she didn't even know was there. And she just went for it and it worked out. And I just think that like holding on to that belief of it's never over until it's over, which I just told myself all day at UTMB, that second half, it's just like, doesn't, like people will come back to you, like run your race. Don't get caught up in other people's, and it's never over until it's over. Especially that race. You start passing. I mean, everyone's having a rough day. No one looks good the second half of that race, especially the last 30. No one's eating as much as they should. Like everyone's having a tough time. And I mean, you're passing people that look like cars on fire. Like it's crazy. I mean, you pass people where you like feel bad passing. You don't even want to ask. Like I was like, oh, are you okay? And I like felt like an asshole. I'm like, he's not okay. I'm like, do you need help? I also feel like a jerk saying that. Like I'm just like, hang in there. Like, and you know, people blow up, walk it into an aid station, then call it. And it's just crazy. It the carnage in the second half of that race is bonkers.
Oh man, it's so nuts.
Yeah, and it, I don't think that answered your question at all, but it was a nice tangent. But going into these races, like, I think this race made me realize, like, I had a bad day, but I saved it. Like, I didn't give up. I problem solved as best I could, even though I should have just drank Coke and or Orangina. Like, I don't know why I didn't fill my bottles with things. And it's mind-boggling to me that I didn't do that. Like, I tell athletes to do that. I, like, have done it while crewing. I'm like, why didn't I do it? But I didn't. So, yeah. And that's a bummer. But I don't know. I finished in 16th, and I know I can do better. But it's cool. It's the most competitive 100-miler in the world. Mm-hmm. And that's neat. I feel like I've never quite known where I stand. I'm like, oh, well, maybe I do. Maybe I'm decent at this. And yeah, it was cool to do that and just realize that I do have way more in me. And if I had a really great day out there, I'd be excited to see where I end up.
Oh, and man,
I will.
So good.
One day.
And next year, 2023. Well, Jeff, and I will say, I will echo your belief in yourself and saying, man, I think on a good day next year, UTMB, and you like, I know, like, now that you've been through the course, like, I know you're going to make some tweaks and things like that, but man, on a good day out there at UTMB, I think you're going to be a force to reckon with, man. And I totally believe in you for finishing strong for sure. And I'm so stoked to follow you out there. Cause I mean, I think 15th for what you came in is impressive given like the adversity that you faced on that day. I mean, like, that is just like, I mean, that's like situations where people just drop and you continue to go forward and continue to climb the ranks and finish top 20, which is unbelievable. You know, pretty high up there for US men too. So, I mean, kudos to you, my friend. And for anyone here listening who wants to, follow your journey going into UTMB next year and maybe interested in working with you at Alpine Running, where can they get in touch with you or follow you on social media?
Yeah, I'm on Instagram. Just my name, Jeff Mogavro, and I'm on Strava. And I have a website, jeffmogavro.com. It's all just my name. And the Alpine Running Guides website as well. And yeah, I'm excited for next year. I have to get qualifying is different now. So There are fall plans.
There are fall. What are the fall plans in the cards now?
I mean, I finished and had this, it's this funny feeling of like my legs didn't feel bad once I like ate, which was weird. Like I'm used to hobbling after these things, at least in the immediately, you know, like you sit down, you get tight, whatever. And that never happened.
Mm.
And I finished, I was kind of like, shit, I could run right now. Like once I kind of given them a break and I took a week off, I walked around a bunch and then I've run this week. And my plan is to keep building the next couple. See how I feel. I'm not going to force anything, but I'm planning on doing the UTMB Puerto Vallarta race in
nice.
Same day that you're doing Javelina.
Oh, nice. Super Halloween. Cool. I'll be thinking of you out there being like, oh man.
Dude, you too. Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, I like suffering with people at the same time in different places.
Exactly. Yeah. 100%.
During UTMB, actually, because of the time difference, we weren't running at the same time, but I finished and I think around then an athlete I coach was running her first 100 at age 62 and
whoa,
she kicked ass and finished, which is so cool. And like, I was thinking about that while I was out there and it was cool just to be, yeah, to help someone through that and kind of go through it with them in a way. I was like, I know exactly what she's about to go through, but yeah, it'll be fun to run that race in Halloween, knowing you're out there as well.
Oh man, I'll be sending you a message after, be like, dude, I hope you didn't hurt as bad as I did out there.
So now awesome. You have to get top three at that race and the other UTMB races to get into UTMB. There's no more. You used to just get in with your intro score.
Hmm.
That is no longer. You have to run UTMB races, which is a big change. And part of me doesn't love the corporate nature of that, but the other part of me wants to go run around Mont Blanc again so bad that I don't care. So my plan is to do a little build here. It's like 9 weeks between the two, which is, it's tight, but I think, which is how I felt. If how I think I feel ends up being how I feel in 2 weeks, I'll give a whirl for another 100 miler. And yeah, just finishing UTMB, I was like, God, I can't wait a year to do 100, like, or 6 months. Like, I need to do another one of these, and I need to bury myself. So yeah, I'm excited.
So good, dude. Oh, you're going to crush it, man. I mean, I saw your the runs that you've been doing recently, like the one on Sentinel. It means looks like you're coming back pretty strong. Like, so I think by the time that race in PV comes up, you're going to be ready to rock and roll. And I'm so excited to see you, because I've no doubt you're going to be able to qualify and get into UTMB next year and show some people, you know, what the fresh Jeff can do out there. Cause I think, I think, with Jeff with Coke and nutrition at the, in the last half of the race, man, I think people better watch out for sure.
You're going to drink gallons of Coke.
Gallons of Coke.
Gallons.
Just put it in the hydration bladder, right?
Out of the bladder. Oh yeah. For sure.
That is awesome. Well, Jeff, dude, this was so awesome, dude. You're such a great guy. This was so fun chatting with you. I just love your energy and your wisdom and positivity, man. It's really infectious. And before we end this episode, I got to ask you a question that I ask every single guest on this podcast. And that is, what can our listeners do every single day to be a better endurance athlete?
We've talked about this on this podcast. I think believe in yourself is kind of the starting point. And I think for a lot of people, it's every day. Like, you got to wake up and just do it and find a way. And I always tell athletes that, you know, they're like, I want to do a 50 miler, but I don't know if I can. I'm like, anyone in this world can do it. But the first thing you have to do is believe. And if you don't believe you can do it, you'll never do it.
Mm.
And it's true. I've seen people believe in themselves and crazy things happen.
Mm-hmm.
That would be my little tidbit.
Dude, I love it, man. So such a good message for a great podcast with an even better guy here. So really appreciate you, Jeff. Thanks for coming on, man. This was a lot of fun, and appreciate your time here, man. And you're going to rock it at UTMB next year and rock it in PV in a few weeks. And so stoked to suffer with you in a different country on the same day on Halloween weekend. It'll be fun.
Heck yeah. It'll be a blast. I'm excited to follow along for your 100 too. And thanks for having me on. This is a ball.
Awesome, man. Yes, it was. All right, everyone. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Everyday Ultra Podcast. Appreciate you listening in. And if you have any topics or guests or suggestions for the show, I would love to hear that, because I want to make sure this show is so valuable to you that I'm able to provide all the things that you're looking for to become a better endurance athlete every day. So if you have those things, feel free to send them over to me on Instagram at Joe Corcione. That is my handle, JoeCorcione. And I'd be more than happy to fit it into the show, reach out to the guests that you're looking for, and ultimately give the value that you're looking for. If you enjoyed this podcast, please share it. Would love to get more ultra runners and people in the ultra endurance community listening to this podcast, because the more this podcast grows, the better we're able to serve you as well. And so thank you so much again for listening in. I tell you, I do not take it lightly. And remember, my friends, become a better endurance athlete every single day. Take care.